In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, amen. Vladika and Reverend Fathers and brothers and sisters, I can sum up all of my talk basically in 30 seconds. So you just have to listen for 30 seconds, and then it's all repetition. I'll be honest with you. I was asking my wife about, or complaining to my wife about preparing this, because I hate to prepare sermons. I never prepare sermons. And when I talk, I hate to talk in public. To me, church is not public, but this is public. So I was kind of nervous about it, and I was saying, you know, I hadn't done it yet. And she said that, well, you usually repeat things 6 or 7 times, so just do it once and it'll be over faster. So, okay, here are the things that to me are prison ministry, and it's 30 seconds worth or so. And that is, first, they are, as far as I know, unattributed. Unattributed aphorisms from the Egyptian Thebaid, either maybe in another universe they were. First is just do it. That's it. I think in our ministry, it's just do it. You get involved in stuff all the time. You have no idea what you're doing, and you just do it. It happens, right? All the time. I never know what I'm doing. I'm always over my head, and I think, Reverend Fathers, come on. A lot of times we don't know what we're doing, but God helps us to do it, so we just do it. And the fact is that very few people are doing it in the prison. So very few clergy are doing it. So just do it. Really. And that applies, I think, to everything in life. And the other aphorism is sort of related to that, and that is 90% of life is just showing up. I can't tell you the number of times I've gone down to prison having no idea what I was going to do, with a Bible or a Lenten Triodion in my hand, thinking I didn't know what I was going to do because I was tired and I hadn't thought it out, and stuff just happened. It always does. So 90% of life is just showing up. I don't think I've always been organized. In fact, rarely been very organized, but I've just done it. And I haven't done it as well as I should. I haven't done a lot of things as well as I should in prison ministry, but I've shown up. And another one is, another aphorism for you is, God made a donkey talk, so I talk. Really. I'm, you know, it's kind of a little funny maybe, but really. I mean, if I didn't go down to these prisons for these past years, nobody would have. Now, there are more people coming into the prison ministry now, but it just so happened that it happened to me. And that's my last aphorism for you. And after this, you know, you can let the cheesecake take its effect. And that is, if he, she, or it crosses your path, you got to do something. Period. That's the way I do ministry. I don't know any other way to do it. I just read something about some priest in somewhere that started a soup kitchen because the parish was moribund and he's really good at cooking and really good at raising vegetables and stuff, and because of that the parish is building up and stuff like that. I have no idea how to do anything like that. I didn't have one tomato last year. I can't do stuff. But when stuff crosses my path, I think I'm supposed to do something. And I think that's in our ministries, I think that's what happens. Somebody crosses our path, a homeless person, a drug addicted person, Orthodox or not Orthodox, whatever, and you do something. And that's how I got into prison ministry. It happened underneath a hackberry tree. That hackberry tree is gone now, but the prison ministry has endured. Somebody came to my parish. He was friends with parishioners. And this was very early on. I think I've been in prison ministry for 17 years, maybe 16 years. I don't remember. And he came. And he was a very troubled young man. So after liturgy, I sat underneath a hackberry tree on a sunny Sunday afternoon and talked with him for 5 hours about everything. He had all kinds of troubles in life. The one trouble he didn't mention to me is that he was actually wanted by the law for a crime. He turned himself in on Wednesday, the following Wednesday, for that crime. I was told by his friends. I started visiting him in the Fort Worth jail. And I went on from there. I can remember going to that Fort Worth jail. I knew nothing about prisons or anything else. The Fort Worth jail is creepy. It's very cold. It's super cold in the winter. In the summer, it's freezing. And you get in an elevator, you say where you want to go, and they say, okay, you get in an elevator, and the elevator has just bare walls, nothing else, no controls, nothing. And you stand there. I remember once counting, and I stood there for like over a minute, and it doesn't move. And I figured, what was he going to do, gas me or whatever? It's really scary. And eventually it starts moving, and then you go see him. And I talk with him. I think that was when I talked to him over the phone. You know, like in prison movies, you talk over the phone. And that's not a very good way to communicate. And so eventually he was convicted, and he went to prison. And I started visiting him in prison. And eventually I believe that he truly wanted to convert to Orthodoxy. In the beginning, I didn't talk to him about converting to Orthodoxy. He had all kinds of troubles. I just talked to him about life, and really the only thing I know how to talk about is the meaning of life, the purpose of life. That's, every sermon is about that, really, unfortunately. That's all I know how to talk about. And so we talked about that a lot. And eventually, in prison, he wanted to be Orthodox. Now, when I went down to this prison in the Hughes unit, which I'm still going to now, it's 3 hours drive. And 3 hours drive to sit and talk with somebody on a telephone for 2 hours. That was really not cool. I didn't like that at all. So I found out about becoming a chaplain, or a volunteer, they call it. And I got the training, which is real simple. And I went ahead and started to have what they call contact visits, where, you know, you can be across a table. You can be in a room. You can give confession. You can give communion. You can give a blessing. You can have a service. You can have a Bible study, you know, like real people to people. And so that's what I started doing. Eventually, came the day for his baptism. Nobody knew about this. I'm going to baptize him. Nobody else in the prison knew about it as far as I knew. When I came, two other people showed up. One person had already been made Orthodox, been received in the church by Father Duane Peterson. And the other one was friends with him, with the other inmate, and wanted to be catechized, become Orthodox, and had been praying for, I think, 2 or 3 years for a priest to come. And then I show up. Well, I catechized him, baptized him, and there we are. So now I start seeing these guys. A few more come. One of these guys says, oh, well, I know somebody in the Michael unit. So I wrote him and started seeing people in the Michael unit. So here I am. I see people in the Michael unit and in the Hughes unit. One is 3 hours away, one's 2.5 hours away. And I see them twice each month, the first, second, third, fourth Wednesdays of the month. And I baptized 7 people. I'm catechizing 4 right now that say they want to be Orthodox. I'm seeing probably about 16 people, and it kind of varies in terms of people that I actually come and sit in our, you know, be in our services or in our sessions. I see a lot more people than that because I sometimes wander around the prison if I need to go see somebody in one of the pods and people talk to me. So that's what's going on now. The most important thing, the most exciting thing that I can report to you right now is that we just started serving Divine Liturgy. And I served one last week, the first one that I know of in the Texas prison system. And then tomorrow morning, I'll serve again. And there's a lot of local volunteers now. Anna Stokes is here. She's one. She served with me last week. There's Chris Stern, George Michael. They're parishioners of Holy Trinity. And Michael Dahm, some of you know him. We talked about him today at the table. He also has helped me in prison ministry. In Tyler, there's a man named Terry Cowan who goes twice a week to the Michael unit. So the Michael unit gets 4 visits a month. The Hughes unit gets 2. Houston is just getting started. They've got several people that are interested. I've talked with some of them. They thought that I knew something, and so they're gonna get started doing stuff. And Father Seraphim Hipsch here, he's gone to the federal unit in Segalville. And I don't really know exactly what they're doing, but I think they're... Is it every week, Father?
Twice a week.
It's twice a week. Wow, cool. So here's a little bit about day-to-day life in prison ministry. I try to write letters often. I don't succeed, but I try to write letters often, either via post or by jpay.com, which is a service that costs you money, but you can send and it gets to them the next day. They call it email, and you basically write a letter and you use their service, and every page costs a stamp. So I write it so that maybe it's four pages, but then I compress it using their smallest font, you know. So I hope all my guys have magnifying glasses. One of my older guys told me, please don't do that. So I pay four stamps for his letters because he can't read it otherwise. Obviously, I do the visits four times a month generally. We have a prison ministry account now. It's not related to, it's administered by our parish, but it's not parish monies. And some people are giving on a regular basis, and sometimes people give a one-time basis or something. And so it's been enough money for me to be able to do things without reaching into my pocket. There were many years when I did reach into my pocket, and that really limited me because sometimes I couldn't afford it. And right now I'm kind of scratching my head about being more organized because, yeah, I do believe in the cross your path method of ministry. That's the only one I've known ever. But I've been doing this now for 16, 17 years, and stuff is happening. And it's getting a little bit bigger and a little bit more organized, and I have to find a way to get out to the pods more. I have. I've gone and blessed their living spaces before. I want to be able to go out there and just, like, sit down and talk with people. And I think I'm going to be able to get that and make that happen. One time I brought in a feast after Pascha. I brought in lamb and Paschal bread and coffee. And they were just, and coffee with the Paschal bread also had butter. And they were just in heaven. And here's the thing they asked me for the next time I bring in a feast. They want salad. That's what they want. That's what everybody wants, is salad. Because they never get lettuce, ever. Never. That's what they want, is salad. So I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do next. I know what I'm going to do next is go to prison tomorrow, and then the next week after that again. But there's just organization that I feel very inadequate to do, but eventually I guess it's going to happen because eventually everything ends up happening. So here's a little bit about being a volunteer in the Texas prison system. Obviously, you're from many states, and there are federal prisons too. It all basically is about the same. You basically become a volunteer. You get their training, and they'll train you about security and what's contraband. And they'll spend 4 hours telling you about security and contraband. In the last session I was in, the basic story was, don't fall in love with an inmate. That's what they told us for 4 hours. I said, okay, I can handle that. Really, that's what they talked about. And really, people do that, unfortunately. That happens all the time. And then in the Texas prison system, you have to have somebody who wants to visit you, who wants you to come, and says, I'm Russian Orthodox, Eastern Orthodox, Greek Orthodox, and you can come and then have what they call a service. Whatever a service is, that's whatever you want to do. It might be different in the federal prison systems. It might be different in other states. And basically, all I did was become a chaplain, a volunteer chaplain. There's no requirements to do anything except be an Orthodox priest. They do not make you do anything else. You don't have to deal with any other religion. You can be who you are. And I call up the chaplain of that prison, say hello, give my driver's license number, and they put me on a list, and then I'm allowed to go. So that's how I've gotten into these various prisons. But it's always been because there were people there who wanted me to come. And now I found out about these people, but there had to be people that say, I want Orthodox service. I'll give you a little advice. Most of it, to be honest with you, is I want you to learn from my mistakes. And I made a ton of them. One of them is I was not consistent in going early on. I was working full-time. And it's hard when you work full-time. It's very difficult to go on Saturday. Texas prison systems, they don't want you to go on Saturday. And besides, Saturday, you know, going 3 hours one way and coming back, it's really hard to serve services afterwards. So I didn't go on Saturday, so I came in consistently. But I would tell you, if you can at all do it, make sure you're consistent. I didn't ride enough. I still don't ride enough. I find it easier to drive 3 hours, talk to them 2 hours, drive back 4 hours, than to spend 2 hours writing a letter. I don't know why, but that's the way I am. And I would hope that you wouldn't be like that. For a long time, I didn't serve the liturgy. Just last week, I started serving liturgy. May God help us to be able to serve it on a regular basis, once a month in each prison. And there were some good reasons in the beginning. I'd done some mission liturgies in some other places, not in prisons, but, you know, in other cities, and where nobody could sing. And all of a sudden, I'm the only one singing, and during the, you know, the great entrance and stuff, it just was very hard. It was hard for me to do all that. And so I wanted to have somebody present who could sing, and I didn't have good volunteers. For years, I had people say, I'll be a volunteer, and then they don't do anything. I mean, I went through six people or so that said, I'll do it. I'm really excited. Well, did you get the training? Oh, no, I haven't done that yet. Oh, no, I haven't done that yet. And then they didn't do it, and nothing came of it. Well, now there's a ton of people in the DFW area and in the Houston area. So it's a whole lot easier to have someone come with me to sing. But also, I tussled with the prison about alcohol. They have rules about alcohol that are kind of, you know, maybe a little weird. They say you cannot... For a while, they wouldn't let me bring in alcohol at all. They say, you can't bring in alcohol. Well, I can't serve the liturgy without alcohol, period. And then they say, you can bring in alcohol, but you can't commune anybody with that alcohol. It's like, okay, I'm going to serve the liturgy, and then what do I do? And I was bringing in the reserve sacrament all the time, but I was stubborn and stupid, and I thought, I'm going to serve the liturgy, and I'm going to give them the reserve sacrament? That's wrong. I shouldn't do that. Well, I'm here to tell you, I do it. And that's, you just got to be flexible. It's not an article of faith that I've got to serve them from the chalice. It's still the Eucharist. And I was too stubborn about it and just dopey about it. So what I would tell you is make sure that you're flexible. Prison ministry, no day's the same, ever. Ever. Every day in prison ministry, something happens that didn't happen before. And it's usually kind of weird. So you just have to deal with it. You just have to roll with it. So I serve the liturgy tomorrow, and I'm going to bring the reserve sacrament, and I'm going to give from the reserve sacrament. And that's all there is to it. That's what I'm going to do. I would also say that a mistake that I made was not to aggressively try to get funding. You know, I used to, you know, on TV, the TV preachers that are always wanting money and saying, you know, God will take me if you don't give me $1 million and stuff like that. I haven't seen him for years, but when I was working in ICU as a nurse, I'd see him at night all the time. And, you know, these guys. So I didn't want to be like that guy, you know. So I was only going to talk about the gospel, not about money. That was really stupid. Because you need money to do prison ministry, okay? Unless you can run really, really fast. Because I go 3 hours drive to go. I mean, that costs money. And... so I was not aggressive getting money. So there were times I didn't go because I didn't have money. Now, when I post something about prison ministry, usually at the bottom, it's like, if you have a heart for prison ministry, if you want to send a donation, you can send it here. And be more aggressive about getting money. Maybe your parish will fund it. My parish did for a period of time, and then they couldn't because of our building and everything like that. But if your parish won't fund it, then be kind of aggressive about getting funding. I really recommend that. So I guess I've kind of gone, already said some of this, but in the ongoing ministry, no day's ever the same. Just roll with it. Just be flexible. You're not going to be compromising your faith. You just got to be flexible. You know, people have wanted confession with me where really was counseling because they weren't Orthodox. I do it. You know, anybody can come to our services. Of course, I only commune those who are Orthodox. I've never had a problem with anybody being upset about that. That prayer for patience that we're about to say, right? The prayer of St. Ephrem, it's a very dangerous prayer. Okay? And that prayer is answered every day in prison ministry. Every day. I have gone down to the Hughes unit, a particular one that I go to, 8 different times and not seen my guys for all kinds of reasons. Literally, the place locked down as I drove into the driveway. Okay, another time, there were no guards present, enough guards, They wouldn't have a guard in the chapel, so they said, you can't come. Another time the chaplain was sick and he wasn't present. Another time the chaplain had forgotten to lay the people in. That's their terminology for saying that they can come to the service. And by the time he called them, it was too late and I couldn't see any of them. Or sunspots or something. I don't know what the other reasons were. But 8 times I have counted that I've driven 3.5 hours, 3 hours, three and a quarter, 3.5, and turned around and gone home. 8 times. So, you know, you got to learn to be patient. It's good to have a reliable volunteer to be with you. I mean, not on a regular basis. If you're teaching, you don't necessarily need it for that, but definitely to serve liturgy. Unless you're really, really good musically and everything, and I'm only mediocre musically, and I don't like handling multiple things at once, and so I really like the idea of someone taking care of those things for me or with me. If you write to prisoners, use a P.O. box. Don't use your home address. You can use a church address in Texas because they don't want you to have a home address because they think that prisoner might be able to extort money from you. Of course, my home address is probably literally in 10,000 places on the internet, but as long as I use my P.O. box, I'm following their rules. There's all kinds of limitations in prison ministry. Time limits, I get an 8 to 10 slot. If my guys are late because of count, then they're late. And maybe they show up at 9:15 or 9:45. I see them for 15 minutes. Maybe if I'm really lucky, they let me slide for 15, 20 minutes, maybe even half an hour. One time it was even an hour. But you've got these time limits and you got to deal with them. I talked about the alcohol problem. If you bring stuff in, you always got to get permission. You got to be careful about that. And you got to follow the rules. I want to tell you, I'm not a rule follower. I always hated rules. I was always in trouble in grade school because I didn't like to follow rules. I didn't like to follow stupid rules. There's a lot of stupid rules in the prison, but I follow every one of those stupid rules. Because if I don't follow those stupid rules, they won't let me go. And maybe forever, if they think it's serious enough. So I follow their rules. The only rules that I follow are Christian rules. God's law makes sense to me. All the rules make sense. So as long as something makes sense, I follow it. Or if it's a stupid rule, but the reason for following it is a good reason, then I do that too. So follow the rules. Here's a little bit about my personal experience. I guess I should have put this in my advice. I didn't do this always in the beginning. As I've gotten older, I've realized how important it is. Pray for everyone by name every day. I've kept pretty good records, actually, and everybody I've encountered, pretty much, I have their name, whether they come regularly or not, whether they're Orthodox or not, whether they're interested or not, catechumens or not. I've got all their names, and I pray for them regularly every day. When you go, let them talk. Let them talk. Don't just present something about, you know, theophany or something. Let them talk too. I have been ready to present them really great stuff about theophany or about something in the Lenten Triodion or something really good and done none of it because they needed to talk. And the reason why is because you might be all they have. I have several guys that I see. I am the only human being outside of prison that cares if they're alive or even knows if they're alive. That amazes me. I can't even wrap my mind around that. That nobody cares about them outside of prison. Their family has disowned them, or a lot of times their family's all dead. And I'm the only person, the only human being that interacts with them on a regular basis. So sometimes they need to talk. Here's a typical visit. It's never typical. It's loud. It's hot. And I guess until I started serving liturgy, I basically did Bible study a lot. I like to talk about John 3 or 6 or 17, Romans chapter 6, stuff like that. Topical things like theophany, the Triodion, things like that. I've gone through the creed with them as part of their catechesis, stuff like that. The Our Father. Served molebens with them. The Akathist is really good because, you know, it's easy to sing that Akathist melody. It seems like it would be easy to sing to me, but it's hard to sing for them. But that's the easiest thing I can come up with for them to sing, and I've taught them how to sing that. Of course, I've given them communion and confession, answering lots of questions, and now serving the liturgy. Another piece of advice is dress for success. Dress like this. They recognize me as somebody different. I'm not the Roman Catholic guy. Okay, I'm an Orthodox guy. And they recognize that. I go through this prison of 3,500 people. Both of them are the same size, 3,500 men. And when I walk around, people recognize me. Now, they don't know me by name, a lot of them, but they wave to me, and they know about that guy who comes around in a black robe twice a month. I think that's important. I recommend that you don't ask what they're in for. I never have. I think we've learned as priests not to be curious, right? I mean, why be curious? People are already going to tell you all kinds of really difficult, hard stuff, right? All the time, right? I mean, it's true. I know more stuff. I can't unring the bell, the stuff that I know. And every one of us is the same. We know stuff that's really hard, you know, mental illness, drug addiction, you know, all this stuff. Suicide, all this stuff is in my head. I do not need more stuff unless somebody offers it to me. And then, you know, it's crossed my path at that point. You can look up every Texas prisoner and you can find out what they did. I think that's a bad idea. And I've never done it, and I've told my guys I haven't done it. Because if they want to tell me, they'll tell me. Some have and some haven't. That's what I recommend. And because I'm not there to find out stuff about them. I'm just there because I want to be their friend. I want to be their pastor. I recommend that you write them using this jpay.com. It's available all over the country for prisons. I mean, somebody's making a ton of money with it, but it's very useful. Okay, one other thing. This stuff is really hard. Sometimes the guys talk to me about stuff, and the prison environment is just horrible, okay? I'm not talking about the violence. After a while, they get adjusted to the violence. And, you know, they can, if they're careful, they can pretty much go years without having even a remotely violent incident. But the overall environment is full of people that are mentally retarded, mentally ill, and sexually just so ridiculously immature, doing things, sexual acting out every day, that is just boggles the mind. And they tell me this stuff that they encounter. And I leave the prison sort of shaking, thinking, I don't ever want to hear this ever again. But they sometimes need to tell me. So it's hard. Prison ministry, people telling you about the difficulties in prison is hard. But I always come back. And if you start going, you'll always come back too. Let me end with a few stories, because what's prison ministry without a few stories? I don't really have any real exciting stories. I'll leave the exciting story for the end that Father Gerasim told me recently, and that's a pretty cool story. So the first baptism, I didn't bring a scissors. And I go, because they wouldn't let me bring a scissors, and I didn't make any other arrangement, and I go, it's time for the tonsure. And I can't do it. And one of the guys says, oh, that's not a problem. I'll get a razor blade. Okay. No, he went, and on the floor, he went, oh, there's one. And he picked up a razor blade from the floor. And I said, what are you doing? He says, there was razor blades all over here. Because they have these little thin razor blades that don't really cut beards very well, but they're always laying around. They have razor blades laying on the floor. They won't let me bring in a scissors, and they have razor blades on the floor. Okay. There's only two times when I've been a little uneasy in prison. One time, big guy, about 6'4", and definitely looked like he could handle himself. He came regularly, wasn't Orthodox, but he loved our sessions, and he told me he wanted to go to confession. So fine, you know, we were in a room, closed and small, And he started talking to me about things. And he started being very angry about what he was talking about. And so, you know, since I know how to do this stuff, all this reflective listening stuff, right? All this talent. So I say, it sounds like you're angry. And he said, I'm not angry. And I said, but the tone of your voice sounds angry. He stood up, and I thought he was going to come right at me. And I remember literally standing up and holding the chair and thinking I was going to have to be like a lion tamer and scream before he tore me apart. He didn't threaten me at all. I never mentioned the incident, because if I had mentioned even a little bit, I don't know what the reaction would have been. He didn't really threaten me. He just got up angry, and he marched out. And then what I did, this is where you got to be flexible. I didn't do anything wrong. I just said, it sounds like you're angry. That's it. He was angry. I just reflected back what he was doing. I didn't think that was wrong, but I wrote him a letter and I apologized. I fell on my sword. And he wrote back and said, you know, thank you so much. And he kept coming. He says, I wasn't ever going to come back. And he kept coming. And he's gone to another prison now. They transferred him, but I still write to him. So, you know, you just got to be flexible. Another time, I was walking going to a building to see a guy, and I was all alone on the walkway. There was nobody else around me, and some guy runs up to me. And I didn't know what he was running to me for. And when people move fast in a prison, you kind of don't know what's going to happen. You're not supposed to move fast in a prison. You're not supposed to do stuff fast. And so I'm kind of like, what's going on? And I'm kind of crouched and thinking, okay, it's about to happen. And he literally stopped just right by my nose, you know? You ever seen those baseball things where, you know, the manager and the umpire arguing, you know, like this? You know, they even got their hat turned backwards so they can get right next to each other. That's what it was like. His nose was right next to my nose. And he says, are you a Wiccan? And I said, well, no, I'm not a Wiccan. Wiccans don't wear this. And then he started talking to me, and it just so happened that the man was incredibly depressed and suicidal and started talking to me. First, he started talking to me about doctrine. What's your doctrine? I said, okay, I'll tell you my doctrine. But it went to what was going on in his life, which was terrible. And I wrote to him and everything, and I see him on a regular basis. Now, I don't see him in the services, but, you know, I see him and say hi and everything. He seems to be doing better. I'll tell you my favorite incident in prison. Not really an incident, more like something one of the prisoners told me. A black man comes to our services in one of the units, which is quite courageous, by the way, for a black guy to do this, to come to a service with a bunch of white guys. That's courageous in prison, okay? And so he's got a lot of just wisdom about him. And he told me a story that he was getting a new cellie. And that cellie was white, and that guy was racist. And he, when he was coming in the cell, he was saying to the guard, I'm not going to be with that person, and he used a racial slur. And so they had a terrible relationship. They wouldn't talk to each other. The white guy was always insulting him. And so this guy, I'll call him D. D decided, I'm not going to bother with this guy. He wanted to sleep on the floor because he didn't want to sleep on the bunk because that was where the black guy was. It was tainted. So he knew that when it rained, the rain would go right down the wall and make the floor wet. He thought, you know, if this guy's going to be a jerk, I'm not going to tell him. So one night it rained, 2 a.m, he's soaking wet. He wakes up, turns on the light, D turns on the light, and he pushes his spare bedroll to the end of the bed. He says, here, take it. The guy says, why would you give that to me? And he says, because it's the right thing to do. And that broke that problem, and they became good friends. It's not easy for black guys and white guys to be good friends in prison. They got to be careful about how they're friends. But they became good friends because of that. And that's my favorite story that I was somehow involved in, that I heard about. But here's the Father Gerasim story he just told me. This is a good one. And there's a California high-security prison. Corcoran. And there's a Greek priest who wanted to serve there. And he, of course, wanted to serve in the Byzantine tones, okay? Asking prisoners to sing the Byzantine tones is like asking a 3-year-old to play a Stradivarius, okay? It's not a good idea. It's just not a good idea. But he wanted to do it. So nobody could sing them. And they had a group of people evidently that were pretty a good core group, and they wanted to learn. So they wanted to find someone in the prison who would teach them. And they couldn't find anybody. Finally, they found somebody to teach them the 8 tones in the Byzantine tones from the music. Charles Manson taught those people the 8 tones in that prison. Evidently, he's quite a good musician. Isn't that amazing? So, I mean, there's other great stories too, but there's none that I've had. So, anyway. Yeah, Father Gerasim said it. Look, he's got an honest face. He wouldn't have lied to me. So, that's my story. And I'd like to say I'm sticking to it, but it changes every day. So I guess it's gonna go on and on and on. And basically, fellow pastor to pastor, I would say if something crosses your path, do something. And if somebody involved in prison in some way crosses your path, then I guess that's your call that you got to go do something and get involved in prison ministry. It's not rocket science. It's just going down and talking with people. If you are organized, it would be better. If you're disciplined, it would be better. But if not, then just do it anyway. And that's what I do. So there's not any real great wisdom to it. It's just do it. Let's just do it. That's all I have for you, Father.